Last week on Life Matters, we spoke to Professor James Lukey about the ethics of offering cash incentives to addicted drug users who agree to be sterilised or take long-acting contraception. If you didn't catch the interview, you can download or stream it from our website. A quick reminder, there's a project operating in the US and the UK called Project Prevention, which offers such cash payments. Professor Lukey is a Principal Research Fellow with the University of Queensland's Centre for Clinical Research. She's co-authored a paper responding to this idea and the question of whether such a program might launch in Australia. Her paper ultimately calls for more research to be undertaken with drug users and other medical services, but it certainly doesn't dismiss the notion altogether, provocatively suggesting that perhaps there's some merit to incentive schemes like this one. And here's some of what Jane Lukey had to say, just by way of reminder.
There is a lot of evidence starting to come out from fields like behavioural economics and a more general move to look at whether incentives might be ethically acceptable in helping people who have already decided to work towards a long-term goal, whether it be losing weight, quitting smoking, avoiding an unplanned pregnancy. The evidence suggests that perhaps if you then provide some incentives for them to make the small gains necessary to get to that final end goal, it is actually increasing their autonomy and is therefore ethically acceptable.
Yes, and we had quite an interesting response to our call for drug users to get in touch about whether they believe it can ever be ethical or justified. And today we're joined by three women with their view. Ruth Bergen from the Queensland Drug Users Organisation. She's in our Brisbane studio. Welcome, Ruth.
Good morning.
And in our Canberra studio is Annie Madden. She's the CEO of the Australian Injecting and Illicit Drug Users League, or AIVL, AVL. It's the national peak body representing a number of state and territory drug user organisations. It's run by and for people who have used or are using illicit drugs. Hello, Annie.
Good morning.
And also in Canberra is Jude Cashmore. She's a former heroin user, now on methadone, and a mother of three adult children now, and I think you're also a grandmother, I hear. Hello, Jude, welcome.
Good morning.
And sit tight, we'll come to you in just a mini. Ruth, what's your reaction to this concept of an incentive scheme to encourage a drug user or addict to undergo sterilisation or long-term birth control?
I think the issue of whether or not incentives for reproductive health, to promote reproductive health on a population level is quite separate from whether or not drug users in particular should be targeted for such a scheme, and that's where it becomes extremely worrying.
What's the distinction that you want to make?
Well, I would argue that if there was real concern about improving access to sexual and reproductive health for drug users, that we would be looking at, if we were taking a scientific or sound public health approach, we would be looking first of all at what the barriers are. Why are some people who use drugs not accessing those services? And look instead at ethical, evidence-based, pre-existing solutions that we know can improve access for people that might be otherwise avoiding those services.
Is it the cash incentive aspect of this that gets your goat? That in fact people are being paid to access services?
Yes, given that at different points some people who use drugs may be, strapped for cash and make precipitous decisions in order to have short-term remedies that for financial needs that might have serious long-term consequences in other points
in their lives. Of their reproductive choices.
That's right.
Annie Madden, you have specific concerns about Project Prevention in the USA. What's your main problem with their approach and what they're doing?
It's a little hard to know where to start, really. AVL has so many concerns.
Start
about
at the very
Project
beginning.
Prevention, but I guess in addition to some of the issues that Ruth has already outlined, a lot of our concerns relate to sort of basic ethical considerations, such as, the right to self-determination and the right to full and informed consent. I think particularly where vulnerable or marginalised people are concerned, and the right to control decisions around one's own body and to be treated with basic dignity and respect. And in this case, I think very strongly too, the right to expect professional competence in the services you're dealing with. I mean, these kinds of principles that I'm outlining outlining here, this isn't rocket science. You know, these are standard, accepted fundamental rights and freedoms for human beings. And the only reason we believe we're even having this conversation at all about this issue and Project Prevention in particular is because we're talking about people who are criminalised due to their use or previous use of illicit drugs, and wrongly, illicit drug users are thought to forfeit their right to be treated with equality and just basic human dignity and respect.
Annie, you've acknowledged though that that in many cases this is about a community of people who are vulnerable in the thick of drug use or addiction, and the Project Prevention scheme that operates in the US and UK was founded by a woman who saw firsthand the damage that can be done to children born to people who are addicted. It's hard to deny that damage. Barbara Harris set up the project because she adopted in succession four of eight children born to a Los Angeles woman. And she nursed those bubs through withdrawal. So what about the rights of the child in all this?
Well, of course, you know, the rights of the child, once the child is born, are those that all human beings should enjoy. So I don't believe in sort of preferential treatment of one human being over another. Of course, we need to acknowledge that babies, when they're born, are extremely vulnerable because they are unable to do for themselves and do rely on adults around them to make appropriate decisions and choices for them at that time. But I think one of the concerns with that issue you've raised around Project Prevention and the woman specifically involved is it's a real overstatement of what occurs in terms of drug dependency and the rate of at which babies are born with withdrawal syndrome. It's not a given. A lot of babies are born to drug dependent women, without any withdrawal syndrome. And it goes back to Ruth's issue too, I think, about the type of services that women are dealing with. If drug-dependent women, during their pregnancy and during childbirth and following, can have access to services where they can be honest, where they're not facing shame and stigma and discrimination and are forced to either lie about their history or current circumstances, you know, they can actually get access to the services they need. The staff in the service can be prepared for what may eventuate and what the baby's needs might be. And research shows us those things are entirely manageable. Baby with withdrawal syndromes, that is a very manageable process, providing.
It's only the beginning of a potentially long process, though, isn't it? In terms of the development of that child in the context of a household that is using drugs.
Yeah, well, you know, I think there's, once again, it's not a given that children of drug users are going to do, universally, worse than other children born in other circumstances. There's many, many reasons why people can face disadvantage when they're growing up. That's a very complex area. And I guess at the end of the day, for those families, drug-using families that are facing difficulties and the children do have additional needs, once again, it's about ensuring there are appropriate supports for those families and services. It's not about removing their fundamental rights to make choices about their bodies and their reproductive health.
Ruth Burgeon, just to consider what Project Prevention is doing, it's offering a cash incentive, $300, quite a lot of money, for people who have decided to undergo sterilisation or use long-term contraceptives. What do you think of the sterilisation issue? Because that seems fairly radical.
It's extremely radical. One can't help but think that some of the people involved in implementing programs of this ilk take some almost evangelical satisfaction in doing so. They're really sort of coming from that point of assumption that drugs are like demons, you know, possessing people. There's a demonization of drugs themselves and drug users, which is, of course, you know, building from stereotypes and stigmatization against drug users. So
some of those stereotypes are real, though.
Some maybe, but again, it's a complex area. A lot of the difficulties and challenges that people using drugs face aren't so much to do with the drugs themselves as the policy context, the stigma and discrimination that they receive. And so, you know, these are the sorts of things that keep people from accessing services that should be the right of all women. All women should have access to sexual and reproductive health.
Let's bring.
So we really need to look at removing those barriers rather than taking inordinate steps that really smack of eugenics.
Yes, some people certainly have argued that the project prevention approach is a form of backdoor eugenics, which is a very tough analysis of it. This is Life Matters on ABC Radio National, and we're talking about the question of whether it's ethical to give cash incentives to drug users so that they may not have children while they're drug addicted. Joining me is Ruth Burgeon from the Queensland Drug Users Organisation, Annie Madden from the Australian Injecting and Illicit Drug Users League, and I'd like to bring in Jude Cashmore now. She is a mother, a former drug user, and now an advocate for drug users. Jude, how did you come to be using heroin? Share us a little of your story.
Well, look, I read a book when I was about 17 called Panic in Needle Park and thought, oh, look, that sounds fantastic, and went out to look for heroin.
Right. And tell us about your use. How long were you using for?
Oh, look, I'm 53 now. I'm on methadone, so some people would say that I've been using for 37 years.
You say you took to it like a duck to water.
Yes, there was something about that drug that I instinctively enjoyed, and human beings are drug-seeking creatures, and I enjoyed the drug, and given that drug use was then and still is illegal, to find the drug you needed to be able to find the people who sold the drug, and that necessitated knowing people that were dealing drugs, and you needed to keep a fairly close ear to the ground because people got busted regularly. So, you know, very slowly you become more and more entrenched in the lifestyle as a necessity. If I could have gone to the chemist and bought the drug every Sunday before church, then perhaps my drug use wouldn't have been quite as... would have had a very different trajectory, but the way it's situated at the moment, the way you need to buy drugs, you need to know who's got them, you need to know who's got the good drugs because they cost a lot of money. And so on it goes.
So in the thick of all this, you have had three kids.
Yes.
When did you have your first child?
When in my early 20s.
And was it a planned pregnancy?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
And were you using heroin at the time?
I was until I realised I was pregnant. And then, as with most women who use, you try to do everything you can to ameliorate any harms. Most women stop smoking and stop drinking, and I stopped using heroin.
And went on methadone?
No, back then you couldn't get on methadone to save your life.
You could if you possibly were a pregnant woman, though. Is that the case?
Well, I'm talking back in the early 80s. It was very, very difficult to get on heroin. And heroin's only really been available since bloodborne viruses, and everybody's been worried that we would infect the larger population with heroin through sexual practices. I mean, it's never really been about our needs. It's been about controlling us.
Mm. So reflecting on Project Prevention, how would you have felt if... at the time, someone had offered you a cash incentive to go on long-form contraception or even get sterilised?
Given the response I received from most people in the medical profession and other people around me that I was a drug-using mother, there's a terrible lot of shame and guilt associated with it. And I think after my first child, you know, I really considered whether I should ever be a parent again. And there were periods during that time when I think I was so overwhelmed by negative attitudes that there would have been periods when I seriously would have considered it. But I don't think I was in any position, or anybody who's using drugs and feeling the guilt and stigma around being a mother. And mothers are very harsh, you know, drug using mothers are dealt with very harshly in our community. I think I may well have taken it up. And I think that's just a tragedy that any woman, you know, because of guilt and shame, would look to stop her reproductive rights for the rest of her life.
I'm interested in how you navigated your drug use with your kids. They're all grown ups now, and professionals. Two of them are professionals. And how did you have this discussion about your drug use with your children as you were raising them?
oh, look, I was very careful, and I ensured that my children didn't need to know about it until they were old enough to have an understanding of it. You know, none of us go around and, you know, just after breakfast inject in front of our children. You know, we keep it as quiet as we can from them because we know that that it will worry them and concern them. And we also don't want them talking in school because, again, you know, there'll be police knocking at the door. It's something that I struggle with every day to try and maintain the way I needed to live as a human being at that stage and live my life in a way that I felt was the only way I could live my life and make sure that my children weren't troubled and endangered by it.
Were you worried about their own use? Were you worried that they might use too?
Only in the sense that under prohibition, I would worry about my enemies using drugs. I'm not worried about illicit drugs per se as being harmful in any way. I'm worried about the outcomes of prohibition. I mean, children, you know, many children have the odd glass of alcohol or, you know, think, I mean, drug. I don't believe that illicit drugs per se are dangerous. I believe that the way in which we use them are dangerous. I wouldn't wish my children were zealots in any facet of their lives and not with drugs either. I don't think anybody needs to be tied down to any one particular consuming way of life.
Although I don't think that your kids have grown up and become drug users themselves, have they?
No, none of them.
And that's a relief to you?
As I said, under prohibition, I wouldn't want them using illicit drugs at all, but then I wouldn't want them drinking heavily either. I mean, I want my children to be well-rounded, happy individuals.
Which they are, and it sounds like, and you sound like you've accomplished much and been a drug user as well, and you've been a nurse, you're now an activist and an advocate on the issue, your children are doing well. The sad reality is that lots of... But there are so many people who aren't as well, Jude, aren't there? So
yes, but many people weren't born... You know, I was brought up in a fairly middle-class, stable family. If you look at the people that struggle with drug use, most of them are brought up in marginalisation, with poverty, they haven't been educated. They weren't even part of the mainstream society from the time they were children. This is a generational thing, and we know how to deal with it. We can see these children in kindergarten. I mean, you know, I've had 30 years now of watching drug use and drug using behaviours. I can pick children in kindergarten whose parents are struggling. Or, you know, as a society, we need to put supports with the parent, supports with the child. This can be stopped if we choose to stop it. We don't choose to stop it because some people are making a huge amount of money out of drugs.
Annie Madden, do you have a response to that? I mean, certainly, I'll ask you this, Annie Madden. One of the main things that you worry about is the ability for someone in the grips of an addiction to make a major, potentially major life-altering decision. And you were a drug user who's now on methadone. Mm-hmm. But do you think that when you were a user that your decision-making was impaired?
Look, I think I would be a liar to say, as a human being, that my decision making has never been impaired by anything. But I don't think that when I reflect back in relation to my drug dependency or drug use specifically, that I can recall times in relation, let's say in this context, to my sexual reproductive health area of my life, that I felt I couldn't or is severely diminished in my decision making due to my drug use. But I also have to say that I, was obviously provided with good services at the times when I did have to make decisions and sometimes very difficult decisions in my case about those issues. And because of the quality of that support and services, I can live with those decisions quite happily to this day.
And that's the key, proper services. Ruth Burgeon from the Queensland Drug Users Organisation, what kinds of support would you rather see offered to women and men who have planned or unplanned pregnancies, for whom drugs are a real problem?
Mm-hmm. I think, again, I was referring earlier to the ethical, evidence-based pre-existing solutions that are out there. Mm. They include things like having one-stop shop services. For example, in a methadone clinic, the clinic could also provide additional health services around reproductive health. Things like, as well, having a wider range of accessible and attractive drug treatments to attract people to health health services in general, training staff to be able to check or eliminate stigma and discrimination against drug users in their service provision. Another option that's been shown to work on at a number of levels is to engage drug users themselves to act as a bridge for other people who use drugs to, you know, to more readily access those services, and it sort of can be used as a proactive measure to overcome pre-existing concerns around discrimination that might prevent people from otherwise getting there.
So a range of things. Look, I think it's a really powerful response that you've both that you all make. And can I thank you so much for thinking it through and joining us on Life Matters.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Natasha.
Ruth Burgeon from the Queensland Drug Users Organisation, and in our Canberra studio was Annie Madden, Executive Officer of the Australian Injecting and Illicit Drug Users League, and Jude Cashmore, a mother and also an advocate herself. Keep the comments coming on this one. Very rich discussion, I think. And you can always leave a message on our listener line 02833 1430 or Facebook or our website. It's all happening. Coming up on Life Matters, we're talking fashion.